Welcome to the Full of Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It's 1:05 PM, the Pacific Summer Time. Today is October 28th. Well, the S&P 500 moved on to a new all-time high in here today. So did the NASDAQ, and it was being led higher by some of the larger constituents. When we look at, for example, the NASDAQ, it has been doing nothing but trending in a mild manner higher since the upside weekly key back in June. This has looked like a bullish consolidation for a while. Now the big question is whether this breakout is going to be sustained. One thing that I do think is rather relevant here is the continued ability of the market to find support in the region of the 1,000-day moving average during these medium-term corrections. When we look at it on a log scale chart, then we still have these ranges, one above another. They are separated from one another by these really very persistent advances that have lasted on average about a year and a half. So the ranges have been about a year and a half, and the subsequent advances have been about a year and a half. Well, that would suggest, therefore, that if we are going to remain in a consistent trend, and a consistent trend is a trend in motion, then what we would anticipate is that once this breakout has been sustained, that the market could rise for another 18 months. And by that stage, we could then see a pullback towards the 1,000-day moving average. I am rather reminded, however, of what happened back in 1987. Because if we go back and just simply zoom in on that particular part of the trend, then what we're presented with was a condition all the way through from 1984 through to the peak in 1987, where we had a very wide overextension relative to that 1,000-day moving average. It was unwound in a very swift pattern, but the moving average continued to hold. Now, I do think that at some stage we're going to get a recession. It's inevitable. The fact that we have an inverted yield curve, well, that does suggest that we are in the latter stages of this expansion. But we also have to consider that we are in a position today where much of the world is already engaged in fiscal stimulus, and that's coming on hot on the heels of extraordinarily low interest rates. This is not a normal set of conditions. We can look at the quantity of debt that is being produced, the willingness of governments to run extraordinary deficits, acceptance of the conclusion that inflation is never again going to be a problem, which I personally think is a rather dangerous conclusion, but it's been working so far. We can see all of that occurring, and that obviously points towards a problem at some point in the future. But as long as this broad consistency in the primary market that has benefited from these conditions remains intact, then we can continue to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. Then I think it's also really worth highlighting the fact that the Europe Stocks Index is within striking distance of pushing on to new all-time highs. It's been ranging below 400 now since the year 2000. A 19-year range might yet be just enough for Europe. And it's trading at a reasonable discount here. I'm going to have to do some work on some of my charts just to change the way that they're popping up. But when we look at, for example, the PE on the Euro stocks, what's particularly interesting is if we look at it since 2000, then obviously there has been the anomaly of the PE rising during a bear market. But there's been a steady period of contraction all the way through from 2013. PE ratios have done nothing but decline in Europe. And that's not a dissimilar situation when we then think about the same condition in Japan. So that's where the bear market has contributed to valuation contraction and rising dividend yields. there are a substantial number of Japanese companies that are sporting quite impressive yields. Then it's the same in Europe, and most particularly the same in the UK. When, for example, we look at the PE ratio on the FTSE 100, we've had a really quite marked contraction, particularly since 2016. So investors will be looking at what's going on Wall Street. They'll be worried about the pace of earnings growth, and they're worried about the momentum driven market and the leverage, particularly on the corporate balance sheets, that is starting to be, well, it's not hardly starting, but it is being accrued. And they'll think, well, this is a momentum move, and it could potentially benefit these shares further. So that's one argument for just jumping on the bandwagon and supporting this breakout. But then, of course, we have the other point, and it is that Europe and Japan are trading at relative valuation discounts. Their P/E ratios have contracted rather than expanded. Yields have increased, and they're beginning to break up and out of these long-term ranges. So therefore, they start ticking the boxes for recovery candidates. And I suspect that that is part of the reason why they are now exhibiting some relative strength, particularly against a background where Wall Street has been a stellar performer over the last few years. Well, that's the argument for developed markets. I think one of the missing ingredients for emerging markets is the commodity complex. The continuous commodity index is above the 400 point level. It is in the process of breaking the downtrend, but it might be just a little early yet to conclude that the downtrend has in fact been broken. And that downtrend has been in evidence since 2018, but what it's been largely range bound over the course of the last 4 years. So it needs to do better than this. It needs to start clearly demonstrating a return to demand dominance. I think we need to look at some more back history to demonstrate just how low commodity prices are right now. And it would be quite normal to see commodities doing better if we are in the latter stages of a bull market, because the economy generally does tend to do better before central banks, in fact, start raising rates again. We're just a long way away from central banks thinking about raising rates anytime soon. In fact, what we're being presented with are increasing efforts by central banks to cut interest rates, provide liquidity, whether that is liquidity in the form of what the Fed is doing in terms of supporting the repo market, or the ECB engaging once more in quantitative easing. Japan is also engaged in quantitative easing, but they are raising their sales tax. Then you have China, which is running a fiscal deficit in the region of about 4% of GDP. Well, this is a lot of money hitting the market. The UK is engaged in a fiscal stimulus. Germany is thinking about a fiscal stimulus. France is already there. Italy is already there. And even then, those are still modest in scope. Europe. One of the things that Mario Draghi said in his parting shot from the ECB was that the region needs a common fiscal policy. We're a long way from that. Now, when we look at the return to demand dominance that we've seen in the equity markets and the potential now that we're going to see some significant additional upside, I think it's worth highlighting, for example, that Microsoft, having secured a Pentagon contract for cloud computing, broke on the upside in here today in a really rather emphatic fashion. It wasn't quite able to hold all of the move intraday, but this is a rather significant resolution of this range. Google announced a bid for Fitbit, and the share is now right in the region of its peak. The continued advances that we're seeing in some of the payment processors like Visa and MasterCard, these are really quite admirably consistent medium-term trends, and as long as they're holding the region of the trend mean, I think the dividend growth in these kinds of shares is something that is helping to sustain them. The absolute dividend yield might be low, but the dividend growth rate of 20% plus on a year-over-year basis since the IPO is something that is certainly helping investors be comfortable with the pace of the uptrend that we've seen. One thing that I thought was interesting, and I did post an article about the nature of buybacks in here today. Well, Texas Instruments was the one that was being used. What's particularly interesting is that this is a company that is not run by its founder. So there has been an acute adoption of financialization and optimizing the balance sheet in the company. They've reduced the share count by about 47%. The other point, of course, is that in that process, they've awarded themselves a great many stock options. So management has been amply compensated for this kind of adoption of financial optimization strategies. But what's particularly interesting is that you don't tend to see these exact same kind of financial strategies in founder-owned companies. So, for example, Facebook's share count has been pretty static for the last few years. When we look at Schwab, then that's another company that is notable for being run by its founder. And they've only just begun to reduce their share count, and if anything, the number of shares has been increasing over the course of the last decade. Against a background for the share where it has been trending down, then the big question is whether they need to be buying back more of their shares to try and support the share price. I think that really does help to ram home the point. Do investors really care about how much a CEO is paid if the price is rising? One thing that we see in major bull markets is that the people that are at the epicenter of the profit potential from the focus of funds flowing into a sector, they are generally very well compensated. And that's what we're getting in the corporate sector. This has been an incredibly benign environment for the corporate sector generally, where you have wages that have been largely flat for ordinary workers, oil prices that have been relatively well controlled, free credit and expanding international markets. That has been something that has been driving the global economy for much of the last decade. Well, obviously, there's been some uncertainty about the trade war, and that has reflected in the ranging environment that's prevailed on the major indices. But a lot of these companies are still engaged in this balance sheet optimization. And the only thing that could potentially derail that would be a global recession, which would impact earnings, or that we start to see interest rates rising in an aggressive manner. Well, we are starting to see interest rates rising, but I think it would be rather rash to conclude that they're at a challenging level right now. At 1.84%, the 10-year hasn't even broken its sequence of lower rally highs yet. But the size of the upward dynamics rather is about the clearest evidence of resistance coming through around the 1.5% level that we might wish for. It does suggest that we have seen a low of at least near-term and probably medium-term significance for the 10-year yield. And the balance of probabilities is that we're going to see these yields push back up towards the 3% level. By the time the yield gets there, well, the corporate sector is going to be even more heavily leveraged. One thing that I do pay particular attention to is high-yield spreads, and this is not a challenging level. In fact, it has now broken its sequence of higher reaction lows. So what that is suggesting is that any talk of pressure coming to bear on balance sheets, or the potential that a significant number of the more indebted investment-grade companies would be forced to Scramble, if they were downgraded into junk status, that just does not look like a credible threat at the moment. And if that's the case, then there is potential here that the stock market is going to break on the upside, that we are going to see an additional leg higher in terms of this decades-long, excuse me, decade-long bull market. I have been highlighting Amazon as something of a barometer for investor sentiment because it has been the buy the dip share. It was well off its low on Friday, and it was in additional positive territory in here today. It has at least confirmed near-term support around the $1,700 level. If it can push back above the trend mean, then that will certainly be a vote of confidence, most particularly if it can sustain a move above $2,500, then I think people are going to be looking at the next big round number. Considering the fact that it paused at 500, it paused at 750, it paused at 1,000, 1,500, and 2,000, well, I think the most basic form of prediction, people are going to be looking at 2,500 and thinking that's probably the next area of potential resistance. And that's a really very significant advance considering that it would be a doubling from the lows that were put in at the beginning of this year. Of course, that is obviously accepting the conclusion that the low is going to hold. And we've had 2 days on the upside. So it does have work to do in order to push back above the trend mean, but most particularly, it has to hold the lows. And I do think that the fact that there are a significant number of retail investors are engaged in Amazon, we have the clear fact that we do have ranges, one above another, that it has been the buy the dips share. We did have a somewhat bigger pullback and a somewhat lengthier range. If it is going to break on the upside, we are pretty close to the time when that should be starting to happen. If the range persists and it sustains a move below the low put in at the beginning of this year, well, then I think we would be concluding that things are looking not so great for Amazon. And it has been, I think, the iconic share for for this bull market so far. The Nifty index was in positive territory in here today. It's been ranging for most of the last couple of weeks, but it has held the low following the corporate tax cut. I think that it's quite likely that the corporate tax cut is going to have the same effect in India as it had in the USA. There's potential here that we're going to see additional upside. There is also some light at the end of the tunnel, potentially, for companies like Yes Bank. We had the very clear acceleration on the downside. We've had an even more impressive rebound. The share is not far off having doubled from the low put in at the beginning of this month. Of course, it is still a fraction of where it was, where it was trading back in April, but it is looking increasingly likely that the lows are in fact in. When we look at what's going on in terms of the Chinese market, I think it is looking increasingly likely that they are willing to sign a phase one deal, at least to call a hiatus to the trade war and ensure that there will not be additional tariffs levied. The Shenzhen B shares was off its lows in here today, at least steadying in the lower side of the range over the course of the last just the last session. The gold price today was down about $10. It wasn't quite able to hold all of its move on Friday. We're still in a corrective phase overall, and the sequence of lower rally highs remains intact. The big question is it going to continue to range in a with a downward bias in a rather slow manner, or whether we're going to get a somewhat quicker process of mean reversion. But the much bigger picture is that gold has sustained the breakout from this lengthy range. It is quite normal to get a first step above the base. And so far, this period of trading has been really quite steady. As long as it is holding the breakout, then we can continue to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. Palladium prices had pushed on to a new all-time high in here today. That has been a particularly impressive advance up and out of this range that's persisted over from March through to September. And the consistency of the move up has been really very firm, with a clear sequence of small ranges, one above another. When we look at the copper price, then it was in positive territory. We are now back in the region of the sequence of lower rally highs. So this is where we would need to see clear dominance coming through and pushing up and through that 200-day moving average. When we look at the Baltic Dry Index, it has so far pretty much held the advance up and out of this range. This is also looking more like a first step above the base. I do think that it was probably driven more by fears about IMO 2020 than any other factor, not least because of the weakness in the global economy and less containers moving around the place. The other very big move that we had over the last few days was in Bitcoin, and it rallied very impressively on Friday to clearly post a failed downside break. It followed through on the upside when trading started again yesterday. Part of the reason for that was because when we had Mark Zuckerberg really talking about the risk that China represented in terms of its support for the cryptocurrencies and developing financial tech, Xi Jinping came out on Friday and voiced his support for blockchain. So he was obviously taking his cue from some of the statements that Mark Zuckerberg had been making. That was translated into a vote in favor of cryptocurrencies, and we had a substantial bounce. Now the question is whether 10,000 is going to represent a short-term period for some reassessment, considering that the price has gone up in a very dynamic manner. Up 33% in 2 days is a lot, even for Bitcoin. What it does suggest is we may get some consolidation, but as long as that trend mean continues to find or to demonstrate support, then I think we are still in a recovery scenario. And certainly that emphatic move to post a downside, a failed downside key, excuse me, it's not, it's a failed downside break. That does suggest that demand is returning to dominance in here. Now, when we think about what's going on in terms of the dollar, it has been steady around the region of the trend mean. But the Federal Reserve has added $200 billion to its balance sheet. Regardless of what the rationale was for that move, it's been a substantial injection of liquidity. It increases the availability of dollars. That has been, the absence of new dollars in the market has been one of the clearest fundamentals for strength. So adding more money back into the market, then that removes one of those fundamental supports for the dollar. It absolutely needs to continue to hold the region of the trend mean, or we would have to conclude that this, I think, less than impressive uptrend over the course of the last 18 months has in fact ended. So I think it is touch and go whether the dollar's dominance is going to remain in play. When we think about how that is translating into some of the commodity currencies, the Australian dollar was steadier in here, but it does need to break its sequence of lower rally highs to really put a foundation under a bullish hypothesis. The New Zealand dollar has also been steadier over the last few weeks, but it was in negative territory in here today. There's certainly resistance at the lower side of that overhead trading range around 65 cents. The Brazilian real has been quite volatile over the course of the last few sessions, but it is rallying and it has now closed its overextension relative to the trend mean. Now the big question is whether this is more than short-term support in the region of the lows, or whether this is a medium-term low which could see the real do substantially better. It is rather that kind of polarity in terms of the potential outcomes that I think people are starting to consider, with the Bovespa index pushing up and out of its range. This has been one of the most impressive rebounds for any market in here this year. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.